1490. Leonardo da Vinci tekent de Vitruviusman en maakt daarmee de mens tot maat der dingen. Bijna 5 eeuwen later bedenkt Alan Turing een experiment waarmee hij zich afvraagt of machines aan deze menselijke maat en vooral intelligentie kunnen voldoen. Het startschot voor een technologische revolutie.
In de podcastserie AI for Life gaan we in gesprek met wetenschappers, gebruikers en ondernemers. Op de schouders van Leonardo en Alan gaan we op zoek naar de impact van AI op ons leven. Kortom, AI for Life.
Welkom in our podcast series AI for Life. Our goal for tonight is to show the diverse range of AI research that is done in Nijmegen, including the translation of science to impact through commercialization. After all, impact is research multiplied by entrepreneurship. The topic of today is the use of AI in early detection of lung cancer through screening of medical images with the help of AI. Since lungs do not have pain nerves, lung cancer is often diagnosed in a late stage, but mass screening of lung images is practically impossible without the help of technology. And this leads to several often non-technical questions, like what is the role of the radiologist in the future? Do we trust AI enough? And who is responsible for missing diagnosis? For this episode, we will dive into the technical possibilities as well as the necessary conditions of using AI on a larger scale. My guests of tonight are Matthias Prokop, professor of radiology at Radboud UMC, Colin Jacobs, principal investigator at Radboud UMC, and Jan Woetzel, and he's head of product management at Mavis Medical Solutions from Germany. My name is Martijn Kriens, and I'm the program manager of Brisker, where we help to bring science to impact. Let's start first with a short round of introductions. Matthias, can you introduce yourself in a short way?
Yeah, I am Matthias Prokop. I'm a professor of radiology and the chairman of 2 departments in the Netherlands, the Radboud University in Nijmegen and the UMC in Groningen. I studied medicine and physics in Germany and trained there at Hannover Medical School. From there, I moved to Vienna in Austria. And since 2002, I'm in the Netherlands. I moved first to the UMC Utrecht, and since 2009, I'm here in Nijmegen. I myself was one of the pioneers of various novel CT technologies, and especially in Utrecht, I have strongly been involved with the setting up of the Nelson screening trial and running the Utrecht branch of it. Since then, I've been making a lot of interesting contributions to lung screening. And myself, I was also interested in getting that into the clinical practice, but in the Netherlands, we are still working on that. As a department head in Nijmegen, I've tried to focus our department on impactful informations in innovations in care. And I'm really proud that we are one of the largest research groups now in Europe. I'm trying to implement AI in clinical practice and work on something like a cross-hospital workflow and integrated care concepts. Ideally, I'd like to build a blueprint for healthcare in which our work remains fun, but care remains affordable. And that's, I think, the most important thing to say about what I've done so far and what my interests are.
Okay, and what I see in practice is that your department is very successful also in building up new companies using this kind of imaging techniques.
Yeah, what I said is important to do to make things that have an impact in clinical practice, and one of the ways is by spinning it out in a company or working together with companies, because what I've learned early on during my a residency already in Hanover. I did some really interesting stuff that I was really proud of, and nothing of that directly manifested because it was not done together with a company, because to keep it short, if you can't buy it, it doesn't really exist.
True. Yeah. Very good. Colin, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Colin Jacobs. I'm an assistant professor and principal investigator at Radboud UMC. I studied in Eindhoven, where I studied biomedical engineering. came to Radboud UMC in 2010 for my PhD research, and now lead a research group on AI in the field of lung cancer and thoracic oncology. I'm also the director of Mirai Lab, which is one of the new AI labs that we have started in Nijmegen in collaboration with Mavis Medical Solutions. And in that role, I lead our research efforts in this field of AI for lung cancer.
Okay, thank you. And Jan?
Yeah, Jan Wötzel. I'm with Mavis Medical Solutions AG. It's a commercial enterprise based in Bremen, northern Germany. We are a classical software company, 140 employees, and I'm responsible for the software product management there. And it's really about the passion of bringing innovations into clinical practice, which means how do we make and guarantee the quality? How do we solve all the little things that make the daily changes, how to use it efficiently, and at the end to roll it out worldwide? Because if something is done properly, it means a lot of effort, so it means it has to be rolled out worldwide to make it cost efficient. And we're quite successful in that. We have a history in breast cancer screening. We were the first there, are still market leader there via different brands. And we repeat the same for lung cancer screening. So I think we have the most highest number of installations worldwide right now. And I think this is one of the key success stories of bringing innovations from Radboud UMC via our channels to the global markets.
Clear. Okay, like Matthias said, to get impact you need companies. So we have the science and the companies here, so that's good to start off the discussion. Maybe as a first question, Matthias, can you give a bit of an insight on how radiologists at this time are using AI to further their work?
Maybe a little bit of a background in radiology itself. Radiology has becoming extremely successful, and we're about to kind of choke on our success, which basically means that within the last, 20, 30, 40 years, we've seen an enormous growth of radiology diagnostics, also treatment, but mainly diagnostics. And that gives us a problem that we as radiologists don't proliferate that much. So in other words, it's a very limited number of people who has to do an increasing amount of work. And if you look at the Netherlands, since 2015, we're basically at the limit of what we can take, roughly a growth in productivity between 1 and 1.5%, because it just can't become more effective. So the only way to do more work with the same number of people on the long run, which we actually will have to do to keep healthcare affordable, means that we need help. Systems that can make us better and can make us especially faster. So when you look at how AI is used in the Netherlands, we all have been dabbled with it. And there are some AI solutions that almost everybody uses, or if they use them, they love them and will immediately implement them in their clinical practice. But that are only fringe applications, and things like determining the age of a child from a photo of his hands. So an X-ray of the hands actually gives you an idea how the bones look, and at different stages in your life, these bones develop. And usually what we did, we compared that with an atlas, took us forever. Now AI does it in seconds, so we just say, okay, this is correct, because usually if we are fighting, AI is the one that actually wins. So we look only whether there are additional diseases that AI would not look for, and that's done really, really rapidly. We also look at, use it for breast density. For many other applications, AI is trying to make us better. And it also tries to make us a little bit less exhausted. But we have very few AI solutions that actually can make us faster, which is exactly what we need to become ultimately. And I think for lung screening, if we can't become faster, lung screening will not fly, because we just don't have enough radiologists in the Netherlands to do the work. With AI, I think it can really help us get the job done quite effectively with the number of people that we have at the moment.
Yes, so I understand. So for a few exceptions, in most cases, it's just enhancing the quality of work, but not as much the productivity and the amount of work that can be done.
Yeah, and the big problem is, of course, if you look how things are paid for, we usually, as radiologists, pay for that ourselves, and we're not reimbursed for it. So in other words, we get not more money for it back. So if it makes it better, that's nice, but we can only buy a certain amount of these software solutions, and then the money is up, and we can't do anything more. So we need a different business model.
Yeah, now I think we'll come to the financial part a little bit later in the talk also. Maybe we had to go to Jan. I understand you're working together with Radboud University Medical Center in the Innovation Center for Artificial Intelligence, Mirai. Can you explain what is your goal in this cooperation?
Yes, so we have a joint lab between Radboud UMC and Mavis, and really try to focus on oncologic lung applications. So that ranges from classical AI applications like detection of lung cancer, estimating the probability of malignancy, up to new modalities, so combining hardware with special sensors. So the company I'm working for is both manufacturing software and imaging detection hardware, X-ray based. So we're in the process of creating new detection devices as well, especially suited for this application. And in this initiative, we really focus on all kinds of lung diseases, but the focus of course lung screening, because that is the most prominent disease, highest mortality rate. So that's what we really focus on.
And where do you see the biggest advantage in working with the university like this?
It's really the excellence. So Radboud UMC has a very unique situation of excellence, both in science, technology, and direct access to medical applications. So that's really quite unique. So it's not by coincidence, it's by choice that we partner here, and we do this for many years already with a lot of success, and we want to continue on this, and in particular strengthen and focus on the lung screening part here. Mm-hmm. Because one should always imagine more men and women are dying from lung cancer than from any other disease. So there's something to care about.
Yeah, no, definitely. Now, and the interaction between companies and science in this case is, of course, quite important. Maybe, and then it would be nice that we can all chip in on the next part. So, Colin, I understand you're foreseeing that AI will be used to enable mass screening, like in population screening, so really on a big level. Can you explain a little bit on that, on how you see that? And maybe from Matthias and Jan, what would be your position on that?
Yeah, so I think if you look at population screening, I think it's one of the best use cases for AI. If you look at population screening, you're screening a large population for a certain specific disease, and the test that you take is specifically designed for that disease. If you look at lung cancer screening, we need to make roughly 300 to 400 scans to find one lung cancer or to prevent one lung cancer death. So if you look at that, you need to interpret a lot of scans to find lung cancers. And that is for humans a boring and repetitive task, where I think computers can really excel. Computers don't get tired, can be well calibrated precisely for these tasks. So I think that's where AI can really excel and help us in tackling this large workload of scans that need to be analyzed to make these screening programs effective.
And is that fairly comparable to breast cancer screening?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at breast cancer screening, the same number game is basically effective. I think Jan has a lot of experience from their work in the field of breast cancer screening, so can maybe comment on that. But I think the same holds also their AI is the use case for AI is, I think, very good.
I think lung cancer is much more complex because imagine from a breast, usually like 4 or 8 images are taken from different directions. Even with a 3D version, it's 70. But for lung cancer, you have 500 scans often of the lung, of the thorax. So radius doesn't have to read only 8 images. He has to read 500. And so it's not only boring, it's really a lot of work. And even if it's a high profile radiologist like Matthias here, there are simply not enough radiologists educated, trained. It takes years until we have the humans to do this. So I think it's really not just about quality and how high is the detection performance and does AI outperform a human. No, it's really about, can we offer this service to the community? Do we have enough humans for that? And there, I think AI brings in something else, enabling this to roll something with quality out to the field.
Yeah.
Maybe it's interesting to understand how this screening is done. In mammography screenings, the breast is, X-rays are taken from the breast in different directions, and usually it is two directions per breast, which basically means 4 images for a regular screening mammogram. For a lung cancer test, which is a CT, low dose CT, we will produce somewhere between 400 and 600 cross sections of the chest. And we have a way of looking at these cross sections interactively. We can go to and fro, and then we can look within the lungs whether there is something that looks suspicious. So that means we have to concentrate quite a bit. Finding these things takes some training, but it's not super complex usually. It means mainly good concentration. And then comes the second step, interpreting it, and that is a little bit more complex. And as we see more and more of these cases, we learn more and more how lung cancer can look like. And when we started in Utrecht in 2002, it is very different from what we knew then. Compared to what we know now, lung cancer can look quite different from what we thought it would look.
Yeah, but if breast cancer screening is more simple, I understand, at least in the Netherlands at this moment, that's still being done totally with radiologists and not with AI. So the what's the bottleneck to use it there?
I think that we are very close to at least starting to use AI in breast cancer screening. There are lots of discussions going on also on the national level. Our national RVM, the body that decides what is to be done, is looking into it. I think that the decisions will be coming reasonably soon, that at least for the way we're doing it now, which is that 2 independent radiologists look at it, and if one of the 2 sees something, we're going to put it to the next stage. That this can be done in a way that it will be 1 radiologist plus AI. That will come relatively quickly. And then is the next step that at one point we will probably have systems that will weed out the normals and then only provide more complex or suspicious cases to the radiologists so that the work will be reduced. But that is very, very near.
Yeah, but what
it's
is
more
what,
a political decision than a content decision.
Yeah, what is the bottleneck in that it takes so long to use AI in this? Is the AI often not good enough, or are there other factors in play?
The AI used to be, at the beginning, not very good, but not good enough. Now we have to really make sure that it is good enough, and that is one part that plays a role here. But there have been large multi-center studies that show that it becomes good enough. And now it becomes more or less a political discussion, how we make it, how we do it in a safe way, how we implement it in clinical practice, and that takes some time.
Yeah. And in general, are radiologists in favor of it?
You can't really speak about every radiologist, but, sure. But in general, we have enough work to do, let's put it this way. Yeah. So if breast cancer goes away, something else will come in.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think if you look at science, I think the gold standard for this to determine whether implementing AI would be safe would be to run a randomized control trial, testing in the intervention arm, applying AI in such a screening program. You see these things now happening in the field of breast cancer screening. Just 2 or 3 weeks ago, a large trial in Sweden published their results showing that you can reduce the workload by taking in one arm just AI plus the radiologist. So these studies will come. And indeed, I think in the end, it's a political decision what level of evidence we need to go towards implementation.
Yeah. What may be an interesting question from different sides, the practice of using it as well as the companies making it. If the AI makes a mistake, who is responsible for the bad results that come out of it?
Yeah, I think it's important in almost any country, any medical device is under heavy regulations by the local law. So it makes a difference if you drive a car and make an accident, or if you're a manufacturer of a medical software which incorporates AI and makes a mistake. So the impact is different, right? And there's no airbag if you do the wrong surgery, for example, induced by that. And I think that's why AI helps a lot, because there's a lot of statistical evidence that can be done. Systems that learn over time, that learn when modalities change, when patient behavior changes. So I think it's not just about reducing workload or having the highest sensitivity. It's really a new kind of working together with a tool, which might and sometimes outperform radiologists. So there's clinical evidence that AI, at least for an average radiologist, has higher detection performance. But no AI will ever learn the experience of a human. For example, let's think about incidental findings. When we have a lung case, that patient might have a cardiac disease as well. So that has to be considered as well. I think this is what really is the benefit of AI, that we can take away the nobles so that the experts can focus on their whole experience and the suspicious cases.
If I go back to what you asked, Martijn, basically the question of what happens if the system makes a mistake, it is that it all burns down to the fact that we as humans don't like mistakes, and these mistakes can be quite serious. But we have to face the reality. We also, as radiologists, make mistakes. So in other words, we have in our quality control system, in mammography, for example, if someone, a woman, comes back with breast cancer, there's a system so that we can look back at the mammograms of the screening and see whether this thing was there already. And in some cases, it was there already and hasn't been detected. So this is just part of our human, the way our visual system works, the way we work. It is inevitable. Even if we have two people looking at it, we still will be able to miss some of these lesions. So what we would like to see is that below the line, that ultimately an AI system will create not more, but ideally less mistakes than we as humans do create. And we will probably not be able to reduce these mistakes to zero, because that's just not how the world works. And we, of course, have to have some insurance in place. And that's what we have at the moment also. Okay. And I think the same things will have to be told about AI. And at the moment, AI is still used in conjunction with radiologists. So we are the ones that are ultimately taking the responsibility for what is happening. Yeah. This will change when there is autonomous AI. So in other words, when AI does stuff itself, then we have to have a clear-cut decision who takes the blame. And we see that there are some companies who have these autonomous systems and they take the blame for their misses.
Yeah. And also in insurance, of course, then... because maybe also a bit related also to this, in general, if you look at population screening, one of the big challenges always is the false positives, how many people get worried because they might have it. How do you see that in lung cancer screening? Huh? Is that sort of on the same level like breast cancer screening?
What we have done in lung cancer screening, and Colin can help me there in a moment, is we have created a relatively complex system that helps us deal with what we find. What you have to realize that small lung cancers will usually manifest themselves as little nodules, little dense areas within the chest. And we can see them from, say, a millimeter or two in size. Now, if I would put you through a CT scanner or myself through a CT scanner, the chance that we would find a nodule is almost 100%. So almost everybody at the age group that we're looking at will have something in the lungs. Most of it, of course, is nothing. The vast majority is nothing. And the probability that something is a cancer increases with the size and also the shape of these little nodules. And Colin has done some interesting work in being able to predict whether something is a cancer or not. Now, in practice, what we're doing is that we have certain, mainly size criteria, but also density criteria, that define the likelihood that something could be a cancer. So if the risk is high, we bring someone back a little bit earlier. If the list is low, we don't bring them back earlier, but put them into our regular screening program, because even if it's a cancer, the cancer will have not enough time to grow to a point that it will ultimately cause damage. So we can wait, and then on the next time we'll see whether it really has grown and needs to be taken out, or if it's still stable, and then it is either nothing or a very slow-growing cancer, which we also do not want to tackle.
Yeah, so to add to that, indeed, you see a lot of these small abnormalities in the lungs in participants in lung cancer screening, and the big challenge is to find the malignant ones, and that's only a very small portion. So indeed, the first trials started with size and density-based metrics, and then more statistical models came into play, and we're now using AI models as we train with a very large set of examples to really precisely filter, okay, these are the ones which are likely malignant, and these are ones which are likely benign, and with that try to reduce this false positive rate in screening trials.
And the real false positives, I would say, are the ones in which we actually do something more invasive than just a CT scan, which would be the ones in which we put a needle in to figure out whether what we have seen is really malignant or not. And our efforts at the moment are to reduce this number in which we really have to intervene to a minimum and try to make sure that by imaging, in other words, by CT, we can figure out whether something is really malignant or probably benign so that the false positive rate stays low. Yeah. But in England, where they already do this type of stuff, of all the nodules that are basically found, it's a very, very small percentage that is ultimately false positive. And I can check it in a sec, and I think it's in the range of about 2%.
Yeah. Can I ask something to Matthias or Martijn?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, Matthias, you started initially with giving the situation of radiology in the Netherlands, and how many radiologists are there roughly in the Netherlands?
It's roughly 1,500.
Yeah, you were president of the Dutch Society of Radiology recently, so you will know these numbers by heart. So if we would, at the moment, our health council is looking at whether they want to recommend lung cancer, the implementation of lung cancer screening in the Netherlands. If that would happen, what is your expectation? Do we have enough radiologists, or are we immediately into trouble, basically?
The point is the following. Because we are, as I mentioned, at the top of what we can take, it means that we're immediately in trouble. On the other hand, what we do see is that we have young people that are still looking for jobs. And this is a really crazy situation that we have in the Netherlands, that our younger colleagues have to wait a few years until they get jobs, and that has to do with the fact that it is not the radiologists who can basically increase their numbers, but it is the group of doctors at the various hospitals who decide we want to take another one in. Now, if you would start screening, we could take more of these people in. So the first step would be a problem. The second one, it is a solvable problem. And the third step is, if you can do that in, together with AI, the pain or extra cost will be very acceptable, let's put it this way.
In order to improve these kind of methods, in pharma, of course, we have something called the post-marketing surveillance, the fact that you are testing things in practice and to lead them back to your development process. Is that also something that's already systematically being done in AI, in these kinds of topics?
Yes, it is. It's required by the law, even in most countries. So every user, the company responsible for bringing a medical device into the market, has to do this post-market surveillance. There are databases in most countries where even if a end user radiologist finds something suspicious, the software is working not as expected, they report it, so all vendors get this feedback. So there's both the push mechanism and the pull mechanism. And it's even more than that. It's not only about the own device. It's as well about the state of art. Has science evolved to a point that device is not state of the art anymore? Even that has to be checked, at least on an annual basis.
Okay. Maybe it's good that we touched on it very shortly already. Had the business model around this, the use of this kind of AI. Can you expand a bit on what should change, at least in the Netherlands? Because every country has its own healthcare system, of course, in the Netherlands, to improve the use of these kinds of technologies.
Shall I put that and take that on? Maybe I'll start with it. As I mentioned, for these AI systems like bone age determination, their radiology department can easily pay for it. We pay per view, and the amount of money is easily payable. When we pay for systems other than that, so the classic bigger AI systems that look at more complex tasks or more difficult solutions, then there are a couple of pricing models. One is a model that where we have a down payment, a certain amount of money that we pay per year, or we pay basically based on the number of cases or the per case that we are actually using the AI system for. Now, if you look at the AI systems that we have in the Netherlands, it's quite a few that are actually being used. They have been used for detections of fractures. They are used for lung nodules, for example. They're used also to kind of quantitate cardiac function. There is a really vast variability of systems in the market. At the moment, it is basically either the hospitals themselves or the radiology departments that pay for it. And there is no reimbursement by the health insurers for it, which basically means only if we are business-wise, making some gains there, it becomes functional, or actually we actually can pay for it. And the problem there is that we are not reimbursed for how good we work. We are reimbursed for how much we work. So if we make fewer mistakes, that's good for our patients. And of course, we would like to make fewer mistakes with AI, but this is not what we get money for. And that is a big problem that we have to have at the moment. Also, the promises that AI companies make in terms of how much they make us better are sometimes a bit rosy, let's put it this way. And AI systems work differently in different populations, so they might work really nice in the Korean population, but they will not work as well in a Dutch population. These things just happen. So what we are actually having at the moment, a real business model in which the income and the spending is in balance, That would only happen if AI would make radiologists faster and less exhausted. And very few systems do that at the moment.
Yeah. And maybe, Jan, is this something that is mainly the Netherlands, or is it something worldwide that this discussion plays out?
Yeah, the political nature of funding healthcare is different in every country. In some countries, it's very regional. For example, in US, each hospital decides, they have a lot of private payers. So usually there's an earlier adoption of new technology, better technology. They are even very aggressive in marketing. We use AI, so you can see it when you get your patient report. We used AI to diagnose you or to screen you. That's not possible, I think, in at least not in Netherlands, not in Germany. Other countries are centralized. For example, Canada introduces lung screening. The province of British Columbia has now a centralized system. That's just a political decision. How much do we want to spend as a community, as a state on that? And how is it then efficiently set up? And that means it's more than AI. It's a patient management. How is the eligible population selected? So you need a history of smoking to be in the risk group, which is eligible for lung cancer screening. How do you manage that? How far should they travel? Is it only in big cities? Do you have trucks with a mobile CT in rural areas, for example? So a lot of organization beyond the radiologist work. And I think there are other countries, it's very regional. So it really has to fit the country. And the Netherlands has a big advantage. It's a concentrated country with a high density of population. So I have a feeling that a centralized lung screening would be very beneficial.
Clear. Okay. We are getting to the end of the podcast. I have for all of you one final question. In general, I always say something that is 3 years out. It's practically already here. 30 years out means we haven't got a clue where we are at the moment or what the future will bring. But 10 years is sort of in between. The seeds need to be there. But what direction do we take there? Colin, first, where do you see this kind of solutions ending up in 10 years?
Sure. Yeah, I think what we'll see is that at the moment, globally, we see that lung cancer screening is being implemented in more and more countries. And that means that through research, we'll see more and more studies that demonstrate the use of AI. I'm convinced that the technology is there. We need more data and we need more studies on more modern data, especially to demonstrate that again. But I'm very convinced that the technology is ready. So I think in 10 years, if the screening programs really start in the next 3 to 5 years, that we'll have AI-supported screening programs in 10 years from now. Not only because we need to convince the authorities and the hospitals of its value, but also just because we won't have the people, the radiologists, to do all the reading. So I think the push will become stronger and stronger. And I really think the technology is there if we have the data to train and validate the algorithms.
Okay, and Jan, you?
So we started on lung screening 10 years ago. So if I look 10 years in the future, I would really love to see all the technology that is available today in academics, in science, in university centers, that it's available to every radiologist that can simply use that. That I would already be happy with that, because we have great advantages today that have a really hard time to make it into clinical practice. And if you think about AI, how easy that can adapt. And for a vendor, it's a real problem to run a new clinical study, provide new clinical evidence if anything changes. So if we're at a point in 10 years where it's accepted that things sometimes fail, sometimes work, but on average, relying on the AI has a big advantage. And I that's what I would dream of and love to see in 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. And Matthias, you?
I would say 10 years is exactly the time span where it becomes really difficult. We have one prognosis where you could say, okay, we have a couple of AI applications that are widespread used, the first autonomous AI systems running. That's what I actually hope that will happen. But everything will hinge on the political will of doing so. If you zoom a little bit out, we have just signed the ESA, basically a contract between the government and all care providers to keep the costs constant. We cannot do that if we continue to work the way we are working at the moment. So we have to make much more clever decisions how we treat, whom we treat, whether we find diseases earlier and make less costs treating them in this early stage. And that's exactly what lung screening is. So if you want to do that, and I realize that we really need to have AI in the market.
Yeah. And
the big problem that Jan has said, namely the regulatory part, can be the reason why we are not as far as we could be. So making sure that the regulatory authorities are on board to coming up with good solutions that are safe for the populations and for the total system, reduce the cost and improve the care. That is basically what we want to see. And I hope that in the Netherlands we will be able to see AI, especially for lung cancer screening, within the next 10 years. And for screening itself, AI is already there, and you can't do screening without AI, because we are measuring nowadays volumes of nodules, and that's already an AI application. But applications that are integrating deeper, those we don't have at the moment in our Dutch practice, because simply we're not screening for lung cancer at the moment.
Yeah. It's completely new field that we open up with it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I would like to thank you all for participating in this podcast. And I would like to thank all the listeners for the podcast. We will have a new one probably in 2 or 3 months. And there's a big chance that it will be around AI in energy. Again, I thank the people, Matthias, Jan and Colin. And we'll see where the field will bring us in the future. Thank you.
U luisterde naar een podcast van AI for Life. Maandelijkse praktijkverhalen vanuit Health en Hightech Hotspot Nijmegen. En vanuit het regionale netwerk LifePort. Over hoe AI kan bijdragen aan betere kwaliteit van leven.